Campus FM presents Talking Eds, a program brought to you by students from the International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, who are studying currently at the University of Malta.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Talking Eds, presented by students of International Masters in Adult Education for Social Change, Cohort 2. I'm Aibanu from Xinjiang, China, your host for the day. The topic of today's program is negative social change in businesses, schools, NGOs, and individuals. I hope you will enjoy your listening of this new episode. Today we have Amelia from Canada, Yuna from South Korea, Marie from Georgia, and Putri from Indonesia here to evaluate different companies, humanitarian organizations, and educational institutions who outwardly appear to be making positive difference in the world, but in reality are creating negative effects for local and global communities.
Hello everyone. As Aibanu has mentioned, our today's program is about negative social change. But we think that before talking about the negative aspects, we think that it's important to say what does the social change itself means. So generally what we mean by social change is the four important aspects, which is social justice, solidarity, participation and security. Apart from that, it's also important to distinguish what kind of social change exists. And normally there are just three levels of change, which can be happen at legal level, which means the change in the laws, for example, or in the social policy. And an example of this type of change would be, for example, Disability Discrimination Act, which made it unlawful for employers to discriminate against a disabled person. Another level is the economic change, and this model is based on increasing economic resources in terms of actual money and free of subsidized housing, health, education, childcare, etc. And it also means to move people and group of individuals from a low resources and a dependence to independence position. And there is the last level of change, which is individual change, and it means that change is achieved by aggregation of individual changes in beliefs, personality, and lifestyle. So this is a short overview of what does social change itself means, and now we are going to move to the negative aspects.
So as we talk about how social change can possibly have negative impacts, we can definitely see some social enterprises that are solving the wrong problems or not really solving problems at all. Yuna, you have some examples of these companies.
Yes, you might be used to hearing about famous marketing, buy one, give one model. And there is one famous enterprise for that, Tom's Shoes. So Tom's is an accessory company that markets itself like a charity. So when you buy Tom's products, the company makes an in-kind donation to a person in need. When someone buys a pair of Tom's Shoes, in the US, for example, the company donates a pair of shoes to a child in a poor country like Haiti.
But there's evidence that shoe donations from Tom's might not be helping children in need. An outside research team reported that shoes weren't making a noticeable difference in kids' lives.
Yeah, when Tom's worked with an outside research team to evaluate the impact of its shoe donations, the researchers were unable to find a way in which these shoes had much of a substantive impact on poor kids' lives. The kids liked the shoes and used them to play outside a little more often, but there was no significant improvement in their school attendance or self-esteem.
In fact, the data actually suggested that receiving the shoes caused the children to spend a bit less time on homework. Perhaps they were too busy playing outside. It also made the children slightly more likely to feel dependent on outside aid, a learned dependency that can be damaging.
According to the data, 66% of children who were not given shoes agree that others should provide for the needs of their families. Among children who received a Tom's Shoes donation, this number fell to 79%. Furthermore, the studies failed to prove any impact on overall shoelessness. Shoe ownership, older shoes were presumably thrown away, general health, foot health, or self-esteem. The whole truth is that people's problems are always a lot more complicated than just the lack of an inexpensive consumer idol.
And this is hardly a message that's limited to Toms. There are numerous products that promise to save the world through a buy one, give one model for everything from underwear to eyewear. The Red campaign, if you're not familiar with this, think about the red color iPhone. It sells as a limited product, and when you buy it, it donates to Red Global Funds to help AIDS research and work. Embedded philanthropy is the practice of building a philanthropic gift to another unrelated financial transaction. Fundamentally, you can imagine yourself as if you are the one ultimately paying for the donation. It appears that this offers you, the consumer, few benefits and has a couple of costs.
We can explain it by two examples. First, it narrows your options as a consumer. For example, you buy red clothing, Tom shoes, instead of whatever clothing shoes you want. The second, it narrows your options as a donor. For example, the amount and recipient of your giving is determined by the company, not by you.
That's right, Yuna. And much embedded philanthropy threatens to shift the choice of charity from individuals by giving for their individual reasons to corporations, likely purely concerned with the PR aspects of the gift. All embedded philanthropy threatens to make donors feel they've done their part by signing up, instead of challenging themselves to give as much and as well as they can. No embedded philanthropy seems to offer genuine benefits to the consumer or donor. What's the point? Why not just buy what you want and give what you want?
I think it's not a very good way to do charity. At best, it's inefficient. It focuses on programs that waste your hard-earned cash by failing to do the most good per dollar. At worst, it promotes a view of the world's poor as helpless, ineffective people passively waiting for trinkets from shoe-buying Americans. While the shoes themselves probably won't lead to any kind of disaster, that worldview can lead to bad policies and real serious harm. This is the exact side effect of social change.
Yeah, and on the surface, this idea makes sense. Shoes seem important. They protect your feet and are a basic requirement for participation in a lot of public life. Not having them sure sounds like a big problem, and getting free shoes sounds like a great solution. It's easy to see why that's a really appealing idea. If the lack of minor consumer goods is causing big problems for people in the developing world, then that's easy to fix by just buying the items in question and handing them out.
Yeah, and worse, it perpetuates the stereotype of poor people as helpless and passive. After all, if an expensive item can transform their lives, but they're just waiting for charity to provide it, then how much agency could they have? I agree with your point. You're pretty smart, but poor people know more about their needs than you do. Instead of giving shoes, why not give poor people cash? Once you've solved one puzzle, it is time to move on to a new challenge.
That's an interesting idea, Yuna. So here to talk about some specific examples of how negative social change has impacted their home country is Putri Lestari, a fellow IMASC student. Welcome to the show, Putri.
Hello, Amelia. Thank you for inviting me.
Putri, you were telling me earlier about an elementary school in Indonesia that's in a very peculiar situation. Can you explain this to us a little bit?
Yeah. Before I work for the elementary schools in Sumatra, where they're located near factory, agriculture factory, where they produce food for cow and fish. So the factory produce smells as well to the community. So from the schools, we can smell how bad it is. So as you can imagine, it's very unhealthy situation for the kids and for the teachers and everyone who lives there.
Yes, I can only imagine going to school and having to smell the factory where they're producing cows and different animals and different food products. So is there anything that this company does in the community to kind of maybe try and get some positive social change?
So for years to engage with the community, what they're doing is giving them charity. They give sausage. So they have a sort of a program that they call Healthy School Program. What they mean by Healthy Schools Program is giving them eggs and sausage every month. And then they also make events for the school. They train the teachers how to organize stuff and also make a cooking competition for the children, and many other cultural events. So basically, it's where all the villagers gather together and see what the company do. Makes everyone happy and also give them some products, some school equipment, basically charity. That's what they are doing.
So basically, the company is using these healthy school programs to change the public's perception of them and to hide the fact that they're actually creating an unhealthy environment for the school. On the surface, it's a little ironic that they're funding these healthy living programs while they're the ones causing the issues, but really it hints to some larger social issues, which is what we're discussing today, when large organizations or corporations do a little bit of good in order to cover up a lot of bad. So, Putri, what is the school or community's perspective of the company? Have they successfully changed the public's perspective? Do people like them?
Yeah. I mean, the society never really have a problem with the company. And on the other way around, the society actually depend on the company. So the society perceive the company as some money. They can ask everything to the company. They can ask for a job. They can ask for money if they want to do some event by their own. So they kind of happy with the company. They never think a company is a problem for them. In other company, for example, that I witnessed, the company give, like, they collaborate with the local, it's agriculture company as well, again, and they collaborate with farmer. So they buy the farmer product to feed the cow. So the farmer's also happy with that. And every month, the farmer get, like, the cow poo for the farmer. So the people seems like having so much benefit, but to the point that they forget that they smell the farm every single day.
That's really interesting. So I understand that you have some personal experience working with this school and with this company and maybe trying to change this healthy school program. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So we engage the company and we persuade them to change their approach. Instead of making events and make us give them charity, we try to change the program into a real healthy school. It's how we do it. We send facilitators to those schools to work together with the teachers and the headmaster to create a real healthy environment. We teach them how to manage the garden. We teach them recycling and many other, like, healthy school. What is healthy, how to, what's a healthy food. So we train them everything for 6 months. And we expect after 6 months, the teacher can continue. So we try to build a habit in 6 months. But can you guess? Is it, like, how do people think about that?
I would assume that people aren't too happy when you take away their sausages and their free resources.
Yeah, they don't like it. They complain about it. So when the first time we came, they asked us that, where's the sausage? And then where's the pants? Where's the stove? Where's the scale that you usually give to us? Where is other products? So before, the company will only go there once a month and give them sausage. But then we are there every day, like the facilitator work together with them. And then the facilitator try to make the teacher living a healthy lifestyle as well. So for them, it's like too much. It's like, why do we need to do this? Why you expect us as a teacher go beyond teaching? It's not easy for them and it's make them unhappy. So maybe only, like, at the first, everyone questioned this program. Why do we need this? No one seems need this program. But then after 6 months, when they start realizing the benefit of this, they start change their mind. Although maybe only 2 out of 10 teachers want to continue the program. So we expand the program from 6 months to 1 year so we can see again the progress of the program.
Yeah, so making larger, long-term social changes like this, it's very difficult, and especially changing perspectives like that is difficult, and it takes a lot of time and a lot of resources. So do you think in the long term for these individual teachers, maybe they'll teach at the school for a few more years, do you think it's worth it for them to be implementing this program, or is it better for them as individuals to just live in ignorance and not know the difference?
Well, being healthy is good for everyone. So what we want to build the awareness of the healthy issue, it's important for you. So I expect one day they also can advocate themselves to the company how to reduce the smells as well. And then how to defeat the smells, how to make a healthy environment. So that kind of awareness that we build, the critical mind, we want to build beyond the charity. Because I would say that charity is dangerous. In other case, I would explain that the government in one region in Indonesia, whereas they have a landfill. So I live in Jakarta, where 12 million people live there, and they dumped their garbage to one area that we call Bantar Gebang Landfill. So Bantar Gebang Landfill, every single day, they receive 7,000 tons of garbage from Jakarta. And then Jakarta give the compensation to the local government there. And the local government give the society money. You can imagine how bad the situation when you receive 7 tons of garbage every single day, and then the society, but the society happy with that because they receive money every day. So when the government try to stop that, they are so angry. They still expecting garbage every day because they also want the money. So charity make people dependent and make people believe that this is the right that they should get. Instead of, they actually can get better life without that charity.
Yeah, and that's a really interesting point. So I think what we're talking about here are cycles of negative social change where you start with one little bit of negative change and people get used to it and this is what they expect and maybe what they think is a positive thing and you get stuck into these cycles. So thank you so much for joining us today, Putri. We really appreciate it. Thank you for giving us your perspective.
Thank you.
Thank you, girls, for discussing several practical good examples. And now I want to connect this to and touch more the global perspective of the negative social change. But before, I just want to make it clear that my aim is not to blame anybody, since I have been working in this system and I've been part of the negative social change as well. So my main aim is problem posing. So because I believe that for the first step, it's important to acknowledge that we have a problem. And after that, to think together how we can change it. Yeah. And I want to start from romanticization and of the field. And I mean, those who are romanticizing the idea of the helping other people. The Putri already partially touched this topic, but I want to talk a bit more about it. This is problematic because sometimes helping people is more harmful than the initial genuine idea of the kindness, and this leads me to the problem of charity. We all know that charity and philanthropy became a norm in this capitalist world, since it's a kind of relief for the rich people who owe more money than the rest of the developing countries. I want to remind listeners that the world's richest 500 individuals have combined greater income than the rest of other poorest people. So just to illustrate what I mean is that I'm saying we can imagine one family who is always helped by the social worker, for example, and they're helped by ready food, clothes, sometimes even by money. And this is maintaining the poverty of the family. Indeed, there are the urgent needs sometimes when they really need help, but in long-term perspective, it's not helpful at all. They become dependent, and this will encourage them to be always in a position of waiting the help from somebody else always. So this is the same in a global context. There are lots of surveys that prove that aids are not sufficient and countries are becoming more and more dependent. And this is logical to assume that the donor countries are pretty happy about it because they have power to control them. This is very beautifully wrapped concept of helping and harming at the same time. And I don't really remember where it was, but it's really interesting example for me to illustrate what I mean. It was in Guatemala and there was a big donation for a emergency food, and what happened in reality was that it ruined the Guatemala's grain market. There was no need for a donation at all, and the supplies after the donation forced the price of grain down dramatically, and people lost their jobs, and non-agricultural companies went out of business, and this is when the consumers were not able to buy products.
So, Mari, do you think that in a bigger scale, this leads us to the power relationship and how the big donors and economically strong countries are influencing the educational programs in so-called developing countries?
I completely agree. And there is perception about international non-government organizations that they are democratic agents in transnational education policy, but it's not a surprise for me that it's structurally undemocratic. And one example of it is the program Education for All, which is run by transnational organizations, and the bigger actor is World Bank. Interesting fact here is that World Bank, which is the biggest actor of Education for All programs, and the World Bank's power is translated to the voting power as well. And furthermore, World Bank is the institution who provides loans to the countries around the world. They don't only provide money, but they also indicate the content of the activities as well. So in other words, World Bank promotes economic neoliberalism in the education systems of the borrowing countries. So another point I want to make here is the issue of international experts. And again, Education for All program experts have access to the planning and managing of the policies in their recipient countries.
So this type of expert transfer leads to the theory of colonialism, and it raises questions of whether we're witnessing the helper syndrome. So are Western-style funded INGOs helping local communities?
Yes, that's true. Like, post-colonial theory questions whether lessons drawn from one country or setting can be implemented in other countries. So one more example of the cultural transfer and post-colonial attitude is, for example, if you can imagine lots of students from South Africa are studying in UK. So this is the example of post-colonialism in education. And it looks like to be the genuine idea for sure, but however, the hidden agenda is different. And I assume that colonialism still exists, but in a way which is very beautifully wrapped. So it's very difficult to see it exactly in examples, but it really exists. It's my personal perspective. So to conclude this point about post-colonial and power relationship, this exploitation of the labor market in developing countries and existing injustice are justified by providing the educational programs, which sometimes have an honest purpose but are not effective at all. It is never possible that NGO programs will change the big picture until we have the neoliberal discourse. And this idea of helping people is genuine, but organizations should be more careful and analyze whether this charity is really helping the poor or they are unconsciously encouraging them to maintain this poverty.
That's a really interesting point, Mari, and I think it points a bit to personal responsibility. Today on the show, we've discussed at length the complexities of social change and illuminated some examples of humanitarian or do-gooder projects that are actually doing more harm than good. However, we have one question that remains, which is what can we as individuals, as consumers, as citizens do to ensure that we're not supporting these organizations or corporations which are promoting negative social change in society?
This is an important question. I believe the first step towards become a more informed global and local citizen is to start asking questions and to stop accepting information that is presented to you at face value. So let us take, for example, one of the earlier examples we explored today, Tom's Shoes, the company that donates one pair of shoes to a child in need for every pair that you buy for yourself. Really, this sounds like a lovely initiative and like an easy way to make a charitable donation. All you need to do is shop for yourself. The first question you should ask yourself is this too good to be true?
That's right. You should try to dig a little deeper into the movement you're supporting. If they're a charitable organization especially, but really, if they're claiming to do any sort of philanthropic work, they should be transparent in their mission, goals, processes, and even financials. If doing this type of research seems daunting or time-consuming, there are some tools that can help you. For example, websites such as GiveWell.org evaluate international organizations on the effectiveness of their work, their results, and their finances, including an assessment of whether or not the organization is currently in need of more funding or if additional financial contributions would likely increase the quantity or quality of work they're able to produce. They also give you a list of more open-ended questions that you can ask yourself in order to start doing this critical evaluation of the organizations on a personal level. Resources like this are a good starting point when considering charities to donate to or organizations to support.
While there are a few resources out there that evaluate charities or companies' social impacts, you would have to be sure that the organization doing the evaluating is also a trustworthy source. There is a lot that can be said about doing your own research into the projects you're supporting. And the easiest way to examine this is to ask questions at the source. When faced with a large, distant company, this can seem like an impossible task. After all, you do not necessarily see the president of Tom's Shoes walking down the street to give you an opportunity to question the effectiveness of their one-for-one model. This can more easily be accomplished, however, if you think more locally. When you spend more of your income in small, locally owned business, you are more likely to make a connection with the people who manage the finances. So, if one day your favorite gelato stand starts accepting donations to build a water well in an impoverished country, you can ask them who the money is going to, how they have accessed the need for a water well, and what percentage of the donations will be given directly to the project as opposed to being taken up by overhead costs such as salaries. You can more easily get to know the people or causes you're supporting and have more confidence that the money, time, or resources you're giving are being used honestly and effectively. And of course, shopping locally also offers a multitude of other benefits for the local economy and community.
Yeah, doing your own research and shopping locally are both really good pieces of advice when trying to be a responsible consumer or donor. However, it's also important to question why you're trying to make a social change at all. As Mari explained earlier, a lot of individuals are giving in order to correct some uncomfortable feelings they may be having about having so much privilege in a world that does not distribute resources equally. While we're not here to question or judge anybody's reasons for participating in social change, having an understanding of your personal motivations can help you to find something that you are passionate about, and thus find social change to work towards that you're inspired to question and dig deeply into.
Thank you, Yuna, Marie, and Amelia, for sharing and discussing your research and thoughts with regarding to negative social change and the current situation. I would also like to thank Putri for informing us with the valuable current situation in Indonesia. This is the end of our program today. Thank you for listening and see you next time.